You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
The Political Cesspool has been providing consistent and trusted leadership since 2004. I think that's especially important during these times of upheaval. You know you can count on us during these uncertain days and always. And we look forward to spending another evening with y'all on the air tonight. Welcome to the Political Cesspool radio program, Saturday evening, August 26th, our live broadcast. I'm James Edwards, Keith Alexander in the studio with me as we kick off another program. And we're going to try to do all the songs you want to hear tonight. All the talk on the show the past couple of weeks and on the website itself has been about Charlottesville. Charlottesville has dominated the conversation recently via TPC's on-air and print platforms. I was just looking back on the articles posted to thepoliticalcesspool.org this week. One video in which our criminal justice correspondent, former police officer Jim Lancia, offers his take and sounds off on Charlottesville in a video that I think everybody should take a minute to watch. A great article, Why Did the Police Stand Down in Charlottesville? One of the definitive articles that I've read, The Battle of Charlottesville, that's one you want to check out. Washington, Lee, and Trump was another one that was posted this week. Pat Buchanan chimes in on it also, America's Second Civil War. And, of course, in last week's show, we navigated the fallout from Charlottesville. The week before that, we were there. Eddie the Bombardier Miller reporting live from the scene with so many invited guests, eyewitness accounts. The Political Cesspool really was the first movement outlet to offer an in-depth response with so many people who were there. Again, all-star guests and faces in the crowd alike. It was really a show of record in the history of this broadcast. And you look back on the last 4 weeks of shows, as I mentioned, the Fallout show last week, which we sort of took it all in and had a week to process it and laid out our opinions on the matter. Live from Charlottesville the week before that. The week before that, Simon Roche in the studio for a three-hour special. And then we were at American Renaissance a month ago. It has been an incredible 4 weeks of programming. We're going to try to live up to the standard we've set over the course of the last 28 days. And we're going to start that right now. Keith, I guess on behalf of you and Eddie and the rest of our crew, we have a lot of listeners, as you know, throughout the South, throughout the world, really, but in Texas, too. And so for everyone down there bracing and withstanding Hurricane Harvey tonight, we wish you the best and Godspeed. There was actually an article that caught my attention about Hurricane Harvey. Now, this is a headline. This is what you got to put up with, Keith, in this day and age. Headline reads, Hurricane Harvey will disproportionately impact blacks in Texas, but no one is talking about it. So I don't know, Keith, do we have the first racist hurricane on our hand? So
yeah,
says the press.
This is a new form of racism called environmental racism, I guess. It's divine racism. God is somehow going to disrespect black people by having the hurricane impact them more than white people. Of course, the fact that they like semi-tropical to tropical weather and they like low, swampy areas to live in might have something to do with that. But, you know, there is something that I think is coming out about this hurricane that needs to be taken into account by the Trump administration. Let me say this. I have noticed in news reports that people are predicting that gasoline prices will spike upward because all of these refineries, the majority of the oil refineries in the United States are down there just north of Houston between Beaumont, Texas, and Houston. Oil City, for example, is a famous one. But most of the refinery capacity for the United States is there, and therefore America's access to gasoline and petroleum products is very vulnerable because of that concentration. Now, why do we not have refineries throughout the country? Very simple, because the left the environmentalists in particular have made it so difficult through the EPA to get certification for building a new refinery that none have been built since the 70s. What Trump needs to do is make sure that refineries are scattered throughout the United States so we don't have that vulnerability. We're not only vulnerable to hurricanes, we'd be vulnerable to a nuclear attack or an act of terrorism that would affect that area. They could basically shut down our access to gasoline and oil. And we could have instead refineries throughout the United States. And if there's an area that will not take them because of their staunch convictions as liberals, that they don't want to have fossil fuels being used, well, they would be the ones punished with the high price of gasoline, like California. California, for example, has tons of oil offshore, but they haven't allowed any of it to be drilled since the 1973 Santa Barbara oil spill, and they also have no refineries out there. And the reason all of the oil from Alaska goes to the Far East is because people on the left coast, Washington, Oregon, and California, won't let it be unloaded and pipelined through their state because of fear of oil spills. And that's why there was such a push to put the pipeline, the I forget what they called that pipeline, but it was very famous a couple of years ago, the pipeline that comes down from Canada through the United States. And that's because they had to do a end run on California, Oregon, and Washington because they wouldn't allow the oil to come through there. You know, all of the, you know, this is something that is coming out because of this Hurricane Harvey, but this is something that really the Trump administration does need to take seriously, and they need to get the EPA out of the way and basically foster the development of refineries throughout the United States so that we're not going to be vulnerable like that.
Well, Keith, your reaction to the hurricane was much more profound than mine. I couldn't see past the headline about the racist hurricane. To me, it had God seen fit for me to be born a black man, I would hope, utterly embarrassed by the incessant pandering by the press. Everything's excused. No failure is your fault. It's all every bit of your lot in life is the result of racism and oppression. And
everybody,
to me, that would be utterly degrading and humiliating, and I would want to be better than that. To live the life of a perpetual victim and blame everybody else for your shortcomings, I would hope to be better than that. But a racist hurricane, that takes the cake. But that's your controlled press, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you know, a hurricane is what they call an act of God, so I guess we have a racist God.
Well, I'm going to mention this in the third hour tonight when Eddie the Bombardier Miller comes on, so we can give it a more in-depth treatment. We don't have the time this hour to cover it because we have so much other things to cover this hour with you, Keith. But in fact, I tweeted about this on my Twitter handle and the handle for the show, at James Edwards TPC. There was actually a news article that came out. The headline of that was, "The Bible is a hate-filled book and God is worse than a white supremacist." So yes, in fact, if a hurricane is an act of God as we believe it to be, well, it makes sense that they would be racist, because God himself is not only a white supremacist, but much worse than a mere mortal white supremacist. So, again, another headline in the current year.
That's our teaser. Wait until we give you the background for that. Russell Moore has a new ally.
We talked about that. The Church of Satan and the Southern Baptist Convention have teamed up to denounce racism. We've got a ton of headlines to cover this hour, and we'll break them down one by one right after this.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Getting advice from a teenager is a little unusual, but please listen to me. If you find yourself pregnant and you're scared, I've got some advice because I've been there. My boyfriend wasn't ready to be a father, and frankly, he wasn't all that interested after I told him I was pregnant. My friends told me I should keep the baby because it would be fun. Well, having a baby is about the baby. It's not about whether I have fun. Some people told me my parents would help take care of the baby, but my baby still wouldn't have both a mom and a dad of her own. And that's really important to me. After putting my feelings aside, I made the best decision I could for my baby. Not because I felt it was easy, but because I felt it was right.
Adoption. It's about love.
I didn't give my baby up. I gave her more.
A message from LDS Family Services.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, as we said, our focus has been singular the last couple of weeks, all about Charlottesville, 2 weeks in a row. And so as a result, we have a lot of headlines that have piled up, as you might imagine, and we're going to try to get to as many of them as we can this hour. And I really mean it this time. So, Keith, you remember the Obama administration put forth this initiative where you could go to this website and start a petition. And if the petition received over 100,000 signatures, online signatures, the Obama administration would issue a response. Now, most of the time, it was just window dressing. Nothing ever really changed as a result of these petitions. But they did offer some sort of a placating response.
A safety valve.
Right. They would just say, thank you for addressing this important issue. Or just something, nothing, really. But they would answer it. Trump inherited that system, and there have been a couple of dozen initiatives that have gotten 100,000 or more online signatures on his watch. Unlike the Obama administration, Trump sometimes answers them, and sometimes he doesn't. If it was a nonsensical thing, I wouldn't answer it. He's not mandated to. But there was an interesting one this week that got 100,000 signatures. A petition was started for the Trump administration to label Antifa as an official terrorist organization. It received 100,000 signatures in 3 days. It'll be interesting to see if Trump takes this on. At his speech in Phoenix, which was a raucous speech, he did mention Antifa by name and in a very negative way, as he should.
Well, that's, you know, inquiring minds want to know that it's high time that the government took notice of Antifa and Black Lives Matter both as terrorist organizations. They were the so-called nameless counter-demonstrators at Charlottesville and also in Boston. They are the primary provocateurs of violence at public gatherings today. And it's time that the government started denouncing them instead of these imaginary white supremacists, Klansmen, and Nazis. Somebody wrote into us that was at Charlottesville that the Nazis and the Klansmen arrived in the same bus as what was that other group? It wasn't Antifa, but
yeah, it was. It was Antifa and people dressed as Klansmen anyway. Let's just put it that way. Arrived in the same bus.
So, you know, again, the presence of Klansmen and Nazis was probably a false flag, and even if it wasn't, it was a minuscule part of the unite the right coalition.
Well, do you think Trump will label them as an official terrorist group? I mean, he will have to respond. Well, he doesn't have to, I guess. Do you think he'll respond? Do you think, what? I guess that's your opinion's as good as anyone else's in our audience, but.
Well, let me tell you, that's fine, but I'm holding out for the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center to be named as a terrorist organization.
Well, speaking of terrorists, Keith, here's another headline you may have heard about. A state senator in Missouri called for Trump's assassination, and she didn't equivocate when she did it. She posted to her Facebook page, "I hope Trump is assassinated." There's no reading between the lines on that one. Republican and Democratic state Senate leaders in Missouri on Tuesday rescinded all of the committee assignments of Democratic Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal. That comes as the St. Louis area lawmaker has resisted calls to resign for calling for Trump's assassination. Missouri Lieutenant Governor Michael Parson called for the Missouri Senate to go into a special session in conjunction with the veto session with the purpose of expelling the senator. So they're not waiting for her to be recalled or replaced. They're actually working to expel her from her seat for calling for Trump's assassination in no uncertain terms. That used to be a crime. I don't know why she's not in jail.
Well, I think we've discovered a new technique. We need to get 100,000 votes or whatnot or emails to the president to have her denounced as a terrorist, like David Duke was, like other people were in the alt-right movement. You know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. These people need to get the same type of denunciations that the left just tosses out like party favors on people in the right, and particularly the alt-right nowadays. You know, there needs to be this consensus. Basically, this would put meat on the bones of Trump's assertion that there were bad people on both sides. Right now, the left is bridling at that. The mainstream is resisting that lesson. This technique that you're talking about could be used to make the president. The president could say, well, I'm bound to respond to it, and here's my response, and he could use that as an excuse to go after these left-wing terrorist groups and terrorist individuals like this state senator from Missouri.
Terrorist groups like Black Lives Matter and Antifa run the streets with the full support protection of certain city governments, so that's for sure. Well, in the meantime, patriots like Sheriff Joe Arpaio go in due time. Thankfully, Donald Trump pardoned Sheriff Joe this week, the Arizona sheriff, and this actually goes back to his speech in Phoenix where he foreshadowed that he was going to be pardoning Sheriff Joe, the same speech where he called out Antifa. But the Arizona sheriff, now 85 years old, is considered a hero among supporters of immigration enforcement, and he was convicted in July 2017 for, quote-unquote, violating a federal judge's order to not detain illegal aliens. He faced 6 months in jail for the conviction. So he was sent to jail, Keith, for upholding the law. A federal
violating a federal judge's law, which begs the question, why isn't the mayor of Charlottesville, the police chief of Charlottesville, and the governor of Virginia similarly found in contempt of court for disobeying the order of a federal judge who said that the Unite the Right rally should be allowed to go forward? And overruled them, them being the mayor and police chief of Charlottesville. And then they do an end run on him by declaring a state of emergency, obviously done to deny the Unite the Right coalition of their constitutional rights of free speech and free assembly.
And that was the first order by a federal judge that hasn't been obeyed as God's holy writ in probably 60 or 70 years in American history. All of the other unconstitutional orders got followed to the letter.
And then on the other hand, when you get an order by a judge saying don't enforce immigration laws and some sheriff has the temerity to go forward and try to do his sworn duty and enforce those laws, he's held in contempt. He has to show cause why he shouldn't be held in contempt for disobeying the judge's order. But then you have a lawful order like the one of the judge in Virginia, the federal judge in Virginia, and for some reason The silence is deafening. Nothing is done about that.
Well, it's quite telling that we have representatives of our government willing to see an octogenarian rot in prison for the sole crime of keeping his tiny little portion of the country safe from illegal aliens. As was written at Occidental Dissent, John McCain, in response to the president's pardon of Joe Arpaio, wrote, "Joe Arpaio illegally profiled Latinos and undermined his claim for the respect of the rule of law." I think John McCain, who, again, Satan just can't wait for him to come on down, is probably just jealous that the sheriff was a man of honor and bravery that didn't have to resort to snitching on his own comrades to Asiatic savages.
Well, the real John McCain is just as misdirected as the ship named John McCain that ran into a tanker. I imagine Trump had to bite his tongue and not make that observation, but John McCain is, you know, he is a piece of work. He is now finally, I guess, in his dying days, decided to, you know, take the shades off and show his true colors. He's become an independent who now caucuses with the Democrats. He's been doing virtually that for the past 20 years.
Well, you would think that somebody facing the grim reality that John McCain is facing would want to spend time getting right with their creator, or in his case, again, Satan, or at least spend time with your family. But no, he's doing everything he can until his dying breath to inflict as much harm on this country as he can. But why should his last days be any different? That's what he's done his whole life. But thank God for Sheriff Joe Arpaio, and President Trump, we appreciate you doing something right, a baby white pill, I guess you could say. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, so many more headlines to cover this hour. I'm already sweating, guys. You're wearing me out. Thankfully, we've got the stamina and vigor of a thoroughbred here in the studio tonight. We're gonna get it done for you. We're going to punch the clock full 3 hours. Stay tuned.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With Liberty News this hour, I'm Dennis Daly. On the 17th of this month, a state senator in Missouri, Maria Chappelle Nadal, posted a call on her Facebook page that President Trump be assassinated. Now, of course, a lot of people were outraged, and she refused to apologize, but finally did so the better part of a week later. The apology was obviously not enough for the people of her state. Nearly 16,000 now have signed a petition to knock her out of office. After giving a rousing speech to the American Legion Convention, the president has signed a historic bill passed by Congress to streamline the appeals process for veterans who have been denied benefits or who have other issues. For years, veterans who have been denied benefits or declared incompetent to handle their own finances have had to go through a lengthy appeal process, time-consuming and costly. It could often take years for an appeal to even be considered. Veterans could not even get updates on what was happening. The new law is designed to cure those problems and give benefits to veterans, the benefits they deserve. You're listening to LibertyNewsDaily.com.
The county sheriff is the first line of defense in preserving the constitutional rights of all citizens. To help your sheriff keep his oath of office, join the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA.org. Complete, accurate information has always been hard to find. For news the networks refuse to use anytime, anywhere, click to LibertyNewsDaily.com or sign up to get Liberty News delivered directly to your email, LibertyNewsDaily.com.
With Liberty News, I'm Dennis Daly.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks, let me get my notes pulled back up here. See what we want to talk about this segment. Okay, Keith, this is just a real quick hit. And then we want to talk about how the war against the monuments to white heroes has now gone global. But we were talking in the first segment about the hurricane's racist, God's a white supremacist, and CNN has doubled down on all of this nonsense with a headline, CNN, whites are supremacists by default. That was a CNN headline. And, of course, we wrote about this in my book back in 2010, and, of course, it's so much more pronounced now. But I said that when you read these headlines, you got to understand that the controlled media doesn't use words the way normal people use them. When you hear the word racist, you think of someone who has an irrational hatred for someone of a different race.
Someone who's trying to lynch people.
White supremacist is a very scary racist, so on and so on. I said, you have to use my English to media dictionary or my English to media translator. A racist means white person. A white supremacist means a white person who doesn't hate themselves. An anti-Semite is translated as a Gentile, and a neo-Nazi is a Gentile who has openly disagreed with a Jew. And if you apply those modern definitions to these articles will start to make a lot more sense. But this is it, folks. Listen, unless whites understand that we have unique group interests just like everyone else, and unless we solidify racially, we're going to be utterly destroyed. No other race would stand for a major media outlet claiming that everyone of that race is an evil person. They would have their own media. Now, we do here with the Political Cesspool, of course. But they would have organizations. They would have think tanks. They would have any number of pressure groups going all out to demand an apology and retribution and financial compensation, and whites need to organize. And for all you foolish white people out there who think that the plague is going to pass over your house if you just cuck hard enough, you got another thing coming to you. Eddie and I are going to talk more about that in the third hour. CNN, headline this week, we tweeted it out at our Twitter, so you can read more about it there. Whites are supremacists by default. Keith, a quick answer to that, and we got to get on to the
Well, the quick answer to that is that whites are the only people that are not allowed to express any sense of racial solidarity with their own kind. Every other group is not only allowed but encouraged to do that. And we are fighting the culture war with one arm tied behind our back, and we can't hope to win that way. And believe me, our opponents, our enemies are remorseless. Once they get us on the ground and get their boot on our throat, it's going to be all over. So you better wake up and smell the coffee now while whites are still a numerical majority. I used to talk about people having the light bulb gone over their head. That was a good analogy, but the young people have a much better one now. They talk about people being red-pilled. We need more white people red-pilled. And that is the secrets to success, James. All we have to do is get enough white people to wake up in the way that you and I did. And when we do that, then we will be an irresistible force. Until that happens, as long as people think that somehow they can buy some type of dispensation for themselves by joining the amen chorus of being against racists and white supremacists and whatnot, when, you know, that they will find out that when it cuts down to the last and the black mob breaks into your house with machetes drawn, that United Negro College Fund Certificate of Merit up on the wall and your NAACP honorary membership, none of that's going to amount to a hill of beans. They're going to see your white skin, and down comes a machete. So wake up and smell the coffee, folks. That's why we need to gather together, and we need to be like every other racial and ethnic group on the globe and look out for our own kind.
That's right. Now, we're going to get to this Monument Madness, how it's spread like a cancer globally now in the wake of Charlottesville. Now, you know how they're trying to destroy any monument to a white hero in America. Well, that's going on everywhere now. I do want to, just as a quick aside, articles about the vandalism of statues read very differently when it's the statue of a certain white-hating communist that's being defaced. There was a statue allegedly spray painted, a Martin Luther King statue. It was probably done by a black-hating or a white-hating black man, as most of these hoaxes are. But in the response to a Martin Luther King statue being spray painted, the article headline was "Thugs Vandalize MLK Monument and Statue." The first paragraph reads: "A disgraceful act of vandalism occurred when a monument" "and statue of Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was defaced overnight in Central Park. The punks used white spray paint," and then it goes on from there. So just in two sentences.
Well, they probably were punks, but I will bet you a dollar to a donut hole it was a black punk that did it.
That's right, just trying to stir up racial agitation and anxiety. But they used the word thugs, vandalism, punks, etc.
Rather than enlightened individuals are the ones trying to tear down the Confederate monuments.
Well, as Patrick Claiborne, the great Confederate general, once said, and I quote, "Surrender means that the history of this heroic struggle will be written by the enemy, that our youth will be trained by Northern school teachers, will learn from Northern school books their version of the war, will be impressed by the influences of history and education to regard our gallant dead as traitors and our maimed veterans as
subjects
for derision."
And that's exactly what happened in the aftermath to the Civil War known as Reconstruction. And that, if truth be told, is why you see all of these Confederate monuments lionizing Confederate heroes and generals that appeared around the turn of the century. That was to undo what damage was done, predicted by General Claiborne during Reconstruction.
Took 150 years because, of course, those generations immediately after the war weren't going to have any of it. But as more time passes, we come a little bit softer and softer with each generation.
Well, what they're doing, there's a great article by Steve Saylor that came out on August the 23rd called War of the Classes. And basically, what the left is doing, they're demonstrating to white Southern Gentiles and white Gentiles generally worldwide how weak they are politically, how despised they are, and how they can do anything they darn well please to us, and we have to eat it with a smile on our face. Well, now, that's exactly what's going on. This is political theater, and the left is basically showing white people that they're no longer in the catbird seat. In fact, they're at the bottom of the totem pole. They can do stuff to white people they wouldn't dream of doing to any other group. Chinese people, Hispanic people, black people, Jewish people, nobody would have to suffer the indignity. In fact, when somebody tries to do to a symbol, an icon of black culture like the Martin Luther King statue, you see the reaction it gets, and compare that to the results that you see or the reaction you get to the defacing of Nathan Bedford Forrest's statue in Memphis, for example.
Which gets celebrated and lauded by the press. Well, in New York City, they have a world-class monument to Christopher Columbus, who Bill de Blasio is apparently wringing his hands over what to do with. They're probably going to take it down. Just in...
And he's Italian, too, like Columbus.
In Virginia, the last couple of days, this was certainly to be predicted, very predictable, that the chronic malcontents at the University of Virginia have now demanded that the Thomas Jefferson Monument at the university where he founded, that he founded, be taken down. If they want to take down a monument in New York City, they need to take down the grotesque and tacky monument to General Sherman that's in Central Park. This monument's gilded. It's, I mean, when is the last time you saw a gold monument? Well, to this...
It's bling.
And it's got these golden angels lifting up Sherman and taking him to heaven. If they wanted it to be accurate, they'd have demons taking him down to hell. But if they want to remove a monument to a white man, remove that. Remove monuments to Abraham Lincoln. Leave Columbus alone. But it's not just Americans. These are all Americans, Keith, Jefferson, Columbus, etc. Cecil Rhodes is up for
Rhodes Scholarship
eradication in Great Britain. Horatio Nelson, Lord Cornwallis, they're going to remove a statue.
Trafalgar Square, and Lord Nelson.
Captain Cook in Australia, they said the monument to Captain Cook.
Colonel Sanders is next.
Is an affront to Indigenous Australians.
Colonel Sanders and Kentucky Fried Chicken has to be on that list somewhere. Well, here's what's happening. They even tore down a monument to Christopher Columbus in Baltimore. Now, this is getting right to the heart of the matter. He is the first white to open up the Western Hemisphere to Western or white development. This is what their real beef is. They don't like the fact that whites controlled the Western Hemisphere and turned it into a garden spot. Basically, the wretched refuse of the white population in Europe proved itself to be better able to create a successful nation than all these other groups combined. In fact, the others just have to come over and be parasites. This is what irks the left so, and this is why they are so rabid in their hatred of whites and how it's coming out with all this destruction of white cultural icons.
All right, folks, hold on right there. When we come back, a little more news this hour. Good news. We're going to end this hour on some good news, and then we're going to get to our featured guest of the night. We'll tell you who that is next, and then she'll be on with us in the second hour. So much more still to come tonight on TPC.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test, available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number's 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211, or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, Keith, I know how much you like listener feedback, and you love your fan mail, as you should, because it's very much earned and deserved and not something given frivolously. But you especially like positive comments from your female fans, and we got one here that I'll read to you on the air from Roseanne. Excellent machete speech, Keith. Red pill probably too late for some, but you, as usual, are spot on. Brilliant.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Yeah, you're the wind under my wings. I love to hear that.
But, okay, yeah, back to it. So talking about the eradication of monuments to white heroes, not just in America now, but across the Western world, all the way up, this plague has washed up on the shores of Australia, where Captain Cook, I think, famous, if I'm not mistaken, for the finding of Easter Island at one point in his career. Anyway, it's going worldwide now, and you wanted to follow up a little bit on that, Keith, and then we're going to talk. We're going to finish this.
It's a war on white
people.
Some
good news. But I did want to say this before we toss it back to you, Keith. Speaking of the mailbag, more correspondence over the course of the last month than any comparable stretch of time in the history of this show. We do need to go to the mailbag next week, because I've had some outstanding emails and letters come in from listeners all over the place, and we'll try to work that in next week's show. But I do want to give you just a teaser. Next hour, Dr. Virginia Abernethy, our old friend Dr. Virginia Abernethy, has a brand new book. We're going to be talking to her about that. Stay tuned for the second hour. Keith, back to you on the monuments.
Okay, now that person that gave the comment for me was Roseanne. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah, thank you so much, Roseanne. Let me say this about what's going on with statues. Statues are cultural icons. Confederate monuments and statues are icons of white Southern Gentile culture. The elites are now showing that they can push white Southerners around, and there's nothing they can do about it. They're so politically weak, they have so little political capital, that they can't defend themselves or even their dead heroes. And on the other hand, could you imagine what would be happening if they were tearing down Martin Luther King Boulevard signs or Martin Luther King Park signs? But Donald Trump made a really interesting tweet recently where he said, "So sad to see these beautiful statues come down. They will never be replaced." He is absolutely right. Think about this. Look at how beautiful, for example, the Nathan Bedford Forrest statue is, how lifelike. There is no artist today that could come up with a similar statue, because basically they've been steeped in about 10 generations of postmodernism and surrealism. And look at the statue that's on the National Mall of Martin Luther King. It looks like one of those ceramic soldiers gathering, guarding a Chinese emperor's tomb. And, they're talking about defacing a statue like that up in New York. It would be impossible to deface a statue like that, because it's a mockery and it's a hideous to begin with.
Well,
it would either be anything they tried to make to replace it with the current statue, with the current state of art in America, would either be amateur hour at best and an open caricature or mockery
at worst.
Well, look
at what happened in Baltimore. Trump said these beautiful monuments, as Trump called the Confederate monuments, won't be placed with anything comparable. And then, sure enough, in Baltimore, as we mentioned last week, they removed two stately monuments to Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson, replaced it with a statue of an anonymous black woman, pregnant black woman. And you're right about the Nathan Bedford Forrest. Now, we're biased, I guess you could say, because he's our boy here in Memphis, our man. But had I not been a Memphian, I would have to look at that and think that has to be the finest equestrian monument that I've ever seen. And if you haven't seen it,
it captures the man's essence. So, it is so lifelike. It is so good. And compare that with the statue on the National Mall of Martin Luther King that, we had an article some years ago called "United We Stand" or "Down on Your Knees, White Guilt," about that occasion and what was happening in Memphis to celebrate it. Well, take a look at that statue and compare that to the Forrest statue. In terms of the artistry and the quality of the statuary of work that was done on that, there's no comparison. I don't think there are sculptors and statue makers now that can match the workmanship that is exhibited in these great statues. And we'll lose those things forever. And basically, it will be divine justice, poetic justice, because if they try to replace them with statues to the current crop of black and multicultural icons, it will be a mockery. These people would be better off with no statue at all than the surreal or postmodern renderings that I'm sure that today's artists would come up with.
So-called artists, that's right. Well, one thing to remember is that there are still hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these beautiful Confederate monuments dotting the town squares and courthouse
lawns. They need to be saved at the very least. If they do come down, they need to be saved and stored because they are works of art without parallel.
Well, anyway, a lot of them are coming down in majority black cities or college cities that are full of
liberals,
social justice warriors, and really morons and ingrates. But what's going on in small town white areas? Well, I'll tell you, we have a little bit of a glimpse into that. I just want to say, God bless Mississippi. That's the birthplace of all my grandparents, both sets of my grandparents, my maternal and paternal grandparents.
Most racially aware group of whites in the nation, in the world, probably.
From small Mississippi towns, and they're the finest people in the nation. And in Corinth, Mississippi, which is the home of my paternal side of the family. My dad was a first-generation Tennessean. Before that, my people came from Corinth, Mississippi on his side.
Or we get a bad egg every once in a while. Russell Moore is from Mississippi.
Well, that's true, but that's right. Not everybody. He's the exception. That's for sure. He's from down in Biloxi, I believe. Anyway, Corinth, Mississippi, there were some threats to the Confederate statue in Corinth, Mississippi, and barricades were immediately put up around it, and police were sent there to guard the statue. The police chief in Corinth and the Alcorn County Sheriff addressed the media about the situation. Both agreed that they would respect anyone's right to protest, but they will not accept the destruction of property. That is the way to go.
Isn't that wonderful? And, you know, in Texas,
Had somebody with a bomb going there to tear.
Well, the attorney general said there's a law that says anybody that tries to, a third party that tries to deface a statue can be shot on site. Do you believe that?
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
All right with me.
I know they have some king in his castle doctrine about anybody that trespasses on your property, you can shoot them carte blanche. There's no penalty for doing that. So they have some pretty strong laws in Texas.
If that's in fact the law, I wouldn't go against it. But I'll tell you, well, and that's right. It's, and you know, of course, a lot of these states, Alabama recently passed one. Tennessee's had one on the books for a while now. State law now protects the Confederate monuments in some of these southern states because the public opinion is overwhelmingly in favor of keeping the monuments. We just quoted an NPR.
But you know, it's smoking out the bad guys. All these local politicians that are cucks like Jim Strickland, Memphis, who looks like the Pillsbury Doughboy. And we have all sorts of, we have another social justice warrior, county mayor, who has come out in favor of removing Forrest's statue. Well, believe me, these guys, there's going to be a hard rain going to fall in, you know, at the next election for these people.
Well, and Keith, getting back to Mississippi, I just want to wrap this up very quickly. In Mississippi, the governor has gone on the record here recently with regards to the flag and the destruction of monuments. But before you answer that, because you have more information about what's going on there, I was just going to say about these polls. We quoted the NPR, and the NPR poll that cited that 70% of all Americans, not just Southerners, but 70% of Americans, 67% wanted to protect the monuments as they were. And that was certainly encouraging. You know, it's even more pronounced in the South. But as you read in a recent poll, Keith, a very recent poll, 44% of blacks were in favor of keeping the monuments. When was the last time you heard that mentioned?
And 40% of blacks were for taking them down. So even in the black community, more people are for preserving this heritage than for destroying them. Because let's face it, even if you have no affinity at all for the Confederacy or for Southern white culture, these statues are beautiful works of art. They're not going to be duplicated. Whatever comes up in their stead will be inferior to what they are.
And removing them is not going to make you smarter or less prone to violence. You alone can make those decisions. But very quickly, Mississippi Governor, now there is a beautiful, and I mean a beautiful, monument to the women of the Confederacy on the steps of the Mississippi State Capitol. And the Mississippi Governor himself, Phil Bryant, recently went on the record with regards to the Mississippi State flag, which still prominently features the Confederate battle flag, and the monuments in his state.
What he was asked again by the Black Caucus of the Mississippi Legislature to have a vote about whether or not the Mississippi State flag, which has a Confederate emblem in the left-hand upper corner, whether it should be removed. And he said, we already had that memorandum in 2001. We're not going to duplicate it. It stands. Now, wouldn't it be nice if Roger Wicker, the senator from Mississippi, took the same position? All of these people that think they're grand, there's a mayor in Germantown, Tennessee, that is trying to get on board about taking down Confederate monuments. He thinks he's making himself popular. He's just assured that he will never be reelected.
All right, we got to end that one there. When we come back, we're going to switch gears to what's going on in the NFL and then get to our featured guest of the night, Dr. Virginia Abernathy. Second hour, your way next.
Right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.